Exodus 15. I'm sure you all know the story of God delivering the children of Israel out of Egypt. Their panic at the Red Sea when the army of Pharaoh, whose heart God had hardened, is charging down on one side, and the Red Sea's on the other. And I'm sure there were not very many opportunities for swimming lessons down in Goshen. God delivered him. Moses said, "Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." The Red Sea parted. They went over on dry land. Pharaoh and his army pursued. God knocked their wheels off and then drowned them. Verse 30 of the 14th chapter says, "Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." Give me just a little more sound. And the 15th chapter opens, "Then," after that victory, "then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously, the horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him." For the peaceniks, the Lord is a man of war. I haven't heard one of these guys with a clerical collar running around saying, no peace can be achieved through war. War is always wrong. God's always against it. Quote this verse. The Lord is my peace. That's true. The Lord is my righteousness. That's true. The Lord is my shepherd. That's true. The Lord is my healer. That's true. The Lord is my provider. That's true. And notice this is, in your King James, capital L-O-R-D. That means that tetragrammaton, that four-letter word that they would not pronounce as the name of the Lord, that we have anglicized into Jehovah, Yahweh. Anytime his name appears, it's capitalized. When it's in small letters, it's another name of God, Adonai. Capital letters in the King James for Lord always means Jehovah's being translated. That high and wonderful name that portrays the way in which he is going to reveal himself to his people, particularly through Moses. And I've named some of them. Jehovah Tsidkenu, God our righteousness. Jehovah Shalom, God our peace. Jehovah Rohi, Jehovah Rophi. Trait after trait linked to that great name, Jehovah, what he will be to his people. Here is one that's kind of left out of most people's Yahweh vocabulary. The Lord is a man of war. And to make the point, the Lord is his name. Wonder if old Saddam sitting down there in his bunker saying, God is great, God is great, God is great, understands he took on the Lord as a man of war. You say you're ringing God in on this last battle? He was in it start, middle, and finish. And while they're singing this song of triumph, they continue, Pharaoh's chariots and his host hath he cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. God's never for killing people, even those that deserve killing. Well, he seemed to be in the mood here. He dunked them real good and held them under long enough to finish the job. They thought they were in trouble when they lost the wheels off their chariots. Got worse, too. The depths have covered them. They sank into the bottom as a stone. Moses is leading this song, rejoicing in the defeat of the enemies. Look at them, they sunk like a stone. Egyptians dead upon the seashore. How much grieving for the dead Egyptians here. Thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, still Jehovah, you notice, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. Now, how do you practice follow peace with all men and dash your enemies in pieces? In the greatness of thine excellency, may God even look better. This was not one of God's dark sides. And this is not some trait you sweep under the rug in God's house. This isn't something you try to hide in God's performance as somehow ungodly. In the greatness of thine excellency, made him look good. Thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. He didn't just sanction them. He had done that. Pick up the Israelites, put them on the other side of the Red Sea, wall them apart and sanction them. Just don't let them cross the Red Sea. He sucked them into it. Dashed them in pieces and they sank in the bottom as a stone. The right hand of Jehovah did that. That's the same hand you get righteousness from. Same hand Jesus sits on. I don't know what Bible some of these people are reading. The best that God is radiates forth under the name glory. He appears in the tabernacle later and in the temple as the Shekinah, the shining forth of his glory. He killed them. And to describe what he did, thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. When are these little wimples for Jesus going to quit apologizing for God's nature? Because they haven't got his gonads. I view God differently than some people do. But mine's a biblical view, I'll tell you that. I read the Bible. Not very many preachers read the Bible. See, I did a PhD at Stanford. They made me read everything. So I read everything else till I got my PhD and been reading the Bible ever since. I learned a lot more since I got out than I did while I was in. Thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And it's from his right hand, all Scripture agrees, all good things flow. And in the greatness of thine excellency, thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. And he didn't do it with sweetness and sugar. Thou sentest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble. We hear many sermons on this passage. Isn't that interesting? He just blew his nose and the Red Sea parted. Cecil B. DeMille really worked to create that effect. All God had to do was sneeze. With the blast of thy nostrils. Isn't that blowing your nose? Told you, I view God a little different than some people. Isn't it nice to have a God that picks his nose and does real things instead of these four-out funny God that never relates to anything that you do? With a blast of thy nostrils, the waters were gathered together. Just think of it. Just thinking about it makes me feel good. If you could just blow your nose and just part a sea. The flood stood up tight, or upright as a heap. And the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. Boy, don't ever be downwind when God blows his nose. And the enemy said, fools, isn't the Bible entertaining? And the enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. Big mouths. My lust shall be satisfied upon them. I'll draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. God's response. Thou didst blow with thy wind, and the sea covered them. I ain't going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. There's some things about God I won't even talk about. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. Let's play a song. Some people's view of God, it's a four-out. It has no meaning at all. I know it's theologically true that God's omnipotent and omniscient and all of those wonderful theological jaw-breaking things. But the God of the Bible is one you can relate to. I just love this one. Thou didst blow with thy wind, the sea covered them, they sank as lead in the mighty waters. That just turns my imagination wild. Makes me wish I was like God in regard to my enemies. Can't think of a better fate for them. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee? After all these wonderful things, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders. Thou stretchest out thy right hand, the earth swallowed them. Pays to be on the Lord's side. How easy we forget. I mean, I got a whole, I sat while that last song played and I sort of counted to myself among my enemies and I rated them. Which ones I'd like him to blow snot at. And which ones I'd like him to sink as lead in mighty waters. He can really do that, you know. I bet if he was my cameraman, he could find me, too, on the screen. Which is more than I can say for Joe tonight. Now, we have 10 to go. I have a lot more to say about the Lord, but I ain't going to say any more till we reach this goal, so get on the telephone. Exodus chapter 15. Moses is leading the song of victory after God has parted the Red Sea, sunk the Egyptians in the sea like a stone. Verse 13, thou in thy mercy, the song of Moses goes, hast led forth thy people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. Now, I want you to remember and underline those words. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. That's where they were. Remember that. The people shall hear and be afraid. That means the people that they will face. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestina, the place that they were going. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. That's known as confidence. Looking back, seeing what God had just done, their enemies in front of them, seem as nothing. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm, they shall be as still as a stone. Till thy people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance. In the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. We can do anything. Secret 5 will be accomplished, and the Lord shall reign forever and ever. Nothing shall stand in our way. For the horse of Pharaoh went in with his chariots, and with his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought again the waters of the sea upon them. But the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea, and his sister got worked up. Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. Now, I grew up in the church. Dancing was wrong. What Bible some people read. These women jigging it out on the side of the sea. And Miriam answered them, "Sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." Later on, God will marvel and lament the fact that the children of Israel saw his actions. Moses came to know his ways. And in Exodus, you learn the ways of the Lord as they are passing on the way to Canaan. They finally ran down. You see a paragraph, starts verse 22. They ran out of steam. Miriam collapsed, and Moses got hoarse, and people got done singing, and here we go. We can not fail. All our enemies will melt before us. So, Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. You can be sure, after every victory comes a wilderness. Sunday night we had a victory. Tonight I feel like I've delivered quintuplets. I don't know what labor pains are, but I've been going through them. I sure been in the wilderness for some days. You sure? We are pilgrims down here on a journey. We have been redeemed and delivered from the bondage of sin, which was typified by Egypt. And our joy is the Lord. And we have no continuing city. And there's no stopping place and no victory that guarantees no more wilderness. Now, you're going to see this again and again in the book of Exodus. I mean, if I had written the book, I would have just had all the wilderness, just get it out of the way. Things so frustrating about us, the ups and downs. Don't even stop. Don't even let them stop. Don't even let them look back. Don't even let them see the dead Egyptian. Just keep going. Put a blowtorch at their rear and just keep them going, man. These ups and downs that kill you. I mean, if there were no victories, I guess I could endure the wilderness. But it's these victories followed by wilderness that's killing. Why in the hell will a God who can put boils and lice and flies and frogs all over the Egyptians, sink them in the Red Sea like a stone, part the waters with a blow of his nose? Why can't he take us to Canaan or anywhere else he wants to take us without these wildernesses of Shur? Well, there's one thing, there's a sure thing in the Christian journey. And that's the wilderness of Shur. We had a victory Sunday night. Of course, it hasn't been accomplished yet. Not all of it's in. Do you know how many wildernesses we've had between our victories the last 15 years? I'm a little cautious about being as blunt as I'd like to be with God about what I think about his wildernesses, considering what he can do with a blow of his nose and a few other things. He can get you going and coming. So you better be careful. But As cautious as I can be, I can say I don't like the wilderness. They went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah, which means bitterness. Just think about it. That's the best God can do. He humiliates the whole Egyptian nation, the most powerful nation on the face of the earth at that time. He smites them with plagues unbelievable. He terrorizes them into subjection. He parts the Red Sea with miraculous power, leads his people across on dry land, sinks the enemy into that same sea, wipes them out as though they were nothing. All that to do, to lead them 3 days into the wilderness of Shur to find some water that's bitter. Hell, my dog could lead me better than that. Paul and Hardy. Which one's the fat one? Hardy's the fat one? Yeah, Stan Laurel. He's the other one. God does seem like Stan Laurel sometimes. Another fine mess he got us into. And it wouldn't be so bad. I just said that. They just let us adjust to the wilderness. Of course, I hope he doesn't really take me serious on that. I'm not too sure I'd like that either. But it does seem an awful lot of to-do to accomplish a little. I told that to God about 4 o'clock this morning. Why did he get me so up Sunday night? To bring me where he brought me at 4 a.m. Friday morning. Hey, are you on the same planet with me, or are you in somewhere else? The people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried unto the Lord. He's better than my dad. Dad's driving across desert Nevada. I told you this story. I was a little kid whining and hollering, "Daddy, I want a drink." And finally, he just pulled over the side of the road and said, "Go out and get one." I didn't say any more for another 100 miles. Lo, a mountain hath conceived and brought forth a mouse. God, contrast this. The Lord's a man of war. The Lord is his name. Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And the greatness of thine excellency. You've led us forth. How great thou art. Great is God, great is God, great is God. The true God, Jehovah, best he can do, lead us 3 days into the wilderness of Shur to find some water that nobody can drink. Better take a six-pack along when God's leading you. Why did God do this? Why did God do this? I mean, you'd think he'd let us enjoy a victory once in a while. That's what's bothering me. I mean, you go on the rest of the chapter. You know where the chapter is going to end in a few verses? This is a fool thing about God, you know. He just 27th verse. I mean, that's the 22nd verse there in the wilderness, is sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verses down. If God had read the end of the chapter before the first of the chapter, he'd known where he's taking them. They came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. 12 wells and 70 palm trees. And the God that parted the Red Sea and delivered from Egypt can't find his way there first. He needs a satellite. Schwarzkopf can do better with a helicopter. I mean, he got 3.5 million people in his care. Delivered them from Egypt, parted the Red Sea, lets them have a big blowout of joy, and they're praising him, and he rewards them by 3 days' journey in the wilderness to some water that's bitter. They can't even drink it. When 5 verses later, he could have found a place with 12 wells and 70 palm trees. And that's just starting their journey. Who can trust him the rest of the way? One thing about it, I can sure recognize God, because that's the way he's been leading me. He learned his lessons well with this bunch. He practiced on them. He's been performing on me. He can never find the 12 wells and the 70 palm trees without that side trip. I ought to hire myself out as a wagon master or a scout for the Christian wagon trains. I could lead them better than that. Why? Deuteronomy 8, after the journey for some 40 years and matriculated through the wilderness, Moses, the same Moses that sang the song, is going to look back, the same Moses that's leading him to the wilderness of Shur, the same Moses that cried unto the Lord, and I haven't gotten to the point of God's answer yet. Some 40 years later, we'll be singing again the great song of Moses in the book of Deuteronomy, 8th chapter. And he tells them to look back, and he says, "Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee, to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knowest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land. Because we have made Christianity a destination, made it compete with the other idea banks of how to make life down here more satisfying, Christianity has forgotten that basic nature of Christianity, that we are, as I said earlier, pilgrims and strangers down here, and that we are in training. God delivered them for his purpose. All these things are written for our example. That's why I tell you over and over again, when we have a victory, expect the test to come. There was a learning, an early on learning process. And the Lord led them. They just sung of his greatness. He was great. He was powerful. He was excellent when he was killing their enemies. But he didn't know what he is doing when he was training us. That's the message. Oh, how wonderful God is when he's laying it on somebody else that we think needs it. We never need any training. We just need tender love and care. Well, that ain't the way it's going to be in this Christian journey. It's a training process. God knew exactly where those 12 wells were in those 70 palm trees. But en route, he had a lesson to teach him by the waters of Marah. I haven't gotten to that lesson yet because that's next live festival's communion time. But if you've been led into a wilderness of Shur, the same God that delivered them from Egypt, the same God that parted the Red Sea, the same God that killed their enemies, that same God was in the pillar of cloud that led them into the wilderness of Shur. And he led them there to prove what was in their heart, and he found out real quick. They were experts without training on murmuring. I have an idea that some of us are still experts without training on murmuring. Now we have, in pledges at least, not in fact yet, accomplished Secret Five's first step. The relentless fund's ahead of us. Now don't check out on me. Let's keep marching and get the job done. Come on, get on telephone.